Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is David Murphy, publisher of the National Black Unity News, and welcome to the Simulcast. We are live on Facebook, Blog Talk Radio, and other formats, and also intertwining with many groups on social media. And so to those who are in the panel, in the Zoom call, as well as those who are on social media, again, welcome to the Monday Night Simulcast. And before we get started, you know, with our conversation, we want to deal with tonight as black businesses, some of the struggles that we go through and some of the solutions to how we can get out some of these struggles, because we are going through some trying times today, not just us, but everybody is. But as I often say, when America get a pinch, black America get punched. And so, you know, so we get hit hard, most hardest, you know, in these trying times. But there's light at the end of the tunnel. We are a resilient people. We know how to overcome. We know how to go through. It's not easy, but we know how to survive. But before we get into this discussion, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to bring up my co-host, Mr. Satawi Jahi, who always has something positive to tell us. Mr. Jahi, you got it, sir.
All right. Thank you, David.
Good evening, everybody, under the sound of my voice. And today is July 12th, and we always do, we come on here, we do a read from Daily Motivations for African American Success. And reading for the night, Roll Jordan Roll. There's no free lunch. Don't feel entitled to anything you don't sweat and struggle for. Murray Wright Elderman, founder of the Children's Defense Fund, and also was a person that was very involved with Dr. King. The people with the strongest self-esteem are those who have learned to stand on their own two feet. They're willing to pass up the fun for the moment and select a course that pays off in the long run. All of us yearn to be free, and our greatest opportunity for freedom is through self-reliance. The eminent historian Dr. Carter G. Woodson expressed it best. Quote, when you determine what a man shall think, you do not have to concern yourself about what he will do. If you make a man feel inferior, you do not have to compel him to accept an inferior status. He will seek it himself. If you make a man think he is justly an outcast, you do not have to order him to the back door. He will go there without being told. And if there is no back door, his very nature will demand one, unquote. At the same time, those who maintain a positive self-image tend to be genuinely helpful to others. In fact, the two tendencies blend so well that it's hard to tell which produces the other. For example, there are two seas in the Middle East. The Sea of Galilee takes in fresh water, uses it to support much-needed marine life, and then empties into the Jordan River. The Jordan River, in turn, spreads the marine life throughout the desert, turned into a fertile plain. While the Sea of Galilee bustles with life, the Dead Sea is exactly that, a dead sea. Its waters are so full of salt that it cannot sustain life. While it takes in water from the Jordan River and hangs onto it, it has no outlet. What a perfect picture of the difference in people. Those who get all they can tend to become self-centered and afraid that someone will steal from them. But those who give freely of themselves usually end up having more than they can give away. Don't give until it hurts, but give until it feels good. And, you know, that's a powerful saying for us. You know, giving to it feels good. You know, a lot of us will be going through dire straits at times, and we still find a way to give. And with our topic tonight, black businesses, is, you know, if there is a black business that you're dealing with, make sure you pay them. You know, just make sure you pay them. You know, they give for you, and you need to in turn pay what's due to them, so that they can continue to move forward and be able to help other people. So That's what I have to say tonight, David, as far as what I wanted to share in terms of opening up this call for tonight. Back to you,
okay,
sir.
That was a very good analogy when you try to deal with people. And some people can manipulate others into doing and thinking that they less than. But then again, you have those who always, you know, have a lot of confidence. They move forth and they go forth with confidence and demand sometimes, you know, respect. But in any case, tonight, you know, there's a very important issue that, you know, I want to discuss with you tonight, and that's dealing with black business. And, you know, there's a lot of issues in America that black folks have to deal with. But my thing has always been economics. You know, we overcame, or some may say we overcame, at least on paper they say we overcame in this country, you know, slavery, the Jim Crow, and all of this kind of stuff. But, you know, we come to find out here in 2021, like we done took a whole loop and we never came out. It just didn't appear to be that way. But nevertheless, black people, melanated people, people that's planted, live, and this is all we know here in the United States. This is our country. This is my country. And be quite frank, I ain't planning on going nowhere either. You know, because we earned the right, as far as I'm concerned, to be here. You know, we may not actually become here, but, you know, we earned it. And we all know that this country was built on our backs. And everybody benefits the work that we have done. Even people from all over the world have come here benefit from the work that we have put in. But unfortunately, all these benefits going around, everybody sharing the wealth, but it seemed like the person whose back it was built upon kind of got pushed to the side, ostracized, and talked about, you know, put down, but very much needed. We may not be needed like we used to be in the labor force, but one thing that we are very well known for, and that is consumerism. You know, people make serious money off of. They say we spend $1.2 trillion annually, $1.34. I don't know how much it is now. That's what they say. But I often believe it's four or five times greater because they really don't want you to know your true strength, your true wealth. But in any case, well, since we're here and we're not going nowhere, and everybody else is plotting, everybody else taking care of their own, everybody's doing what they're supposed to do, but for some reasons, for a lot of reasons, we have been impacted more than, you know, than the average, group of people. You see, even till this day, we are not, a lot of people don't recognize us as first-class citizens. A lot of people don't even recognize us as a human being. They say we less than, some think that way. But the truth is, you should know who you are and whose you are. And therefore, I don't think God made no mistakes. I don't think he made no mistake when he made me or you. And like I said, we have made great contributions, and we have strived. We have fought and died for this country. And like I said, but I don't know about you, but I ain't going nowhere. But in any case, since I'm here, since we are here, and we still have to deal with these issues, these struggles that we all have to go through. And I have some powerful people that I see was already on the call with us this evening. And I just want to have an open discussion, and because, you know, when everybody brings something to the table, everybody feasts upon it. And so I'm going to start off with myself. You know, I just want you all to jump in when you can, because you never know the power of media. Who may be listening in on Facebook Live or Blog Talk, or who may be listening to other resources as well, that they may hear something that you say that may inspire them or push them to do something better with their lives. And so, you know, I've been dealing with economics for a long time, not in the sense of an economist or anything like that. But I do know that when you're in a capitalist society, money talks. And for order you to build institutions like we used to do, college, and all that takes money. And since we have money, I don't know about throughout the diaspora, but I believe here in the United States, we're the most wealthiest black people on earth in this country. And because they say, and I'm just going by, that's all I can go by. They say that the money that $1.3 trillion equates to almost the ninth or eighth largest country in the world for our spending power is concerned. That's a lot of power that we yield them, ladies and gentlemen, in this country. But we all know the story. I know I'm preaching to the choir, that very little of that money is circulated amongst ourselves, and therefore it goes right back out. Other groups hide 13, 20, 25 times before it leaves their communities. And therefore, that lies one of our issues. But of course, the solution to that is simply, we need to start supporting each other. Keep the money circulating amongst ourselves. That's one solution. But that's not as easily said than done. And I'm going to cast the first stone. Since we have so much wealth, and the solution is that we need to circulate this money amongst ourselves, so how do we do that? Well, I have a couple of ways. First of all, I'm involved with this great publication that just came off the press, ladies and gentlemen, the National Black Unity News newspaper. Publication consists of a whole group of powerful people who have come together for the sole purpose of uplifting us, black people. We don't put down any group of racist people. I want to make that clear. But our intentions are to uplift us, to inspire us, to take our wisdom and our knowledge and our life experiences and share it with us. And this publication is by us and it's for us and it's about us. And so this is one solution, because information is power if you're using the correct manner. And what we do with this publication is we have a wealth of people who writes about their experiences, and they share solution-oriented information with our readers online as well as the physical copy. And the second thing is that we're working on is directories. This is another way, because in order for you to spend your money with us, you got to know who and where we are. Now, unfortunately, I kind of cut my teeth on the directory here locally in the Baltimore, Maryland area many years ago. But I was able to gather in that time, this before computers was out. And I had to physically go around. It took me 2 years to do this. I had to go to the library, and I was looking. There wasn't even a black director. There was one here, kind of, but it had shut down by the time I came along to see. And they didn't have any type of directories here or anything. So I came up with a thing called Togetherness Unlimited, and it was a discount directory where I offered a grant to the business owners, free advertising and a little director. The director was by the size of a Jet magazine and a little small, so you can put it in your pocketbook or your pocket, and you can carry it around with you. If you was a certain part of town, you can find out where these businesses are that you can go, you know, spend your money with. And I had a discount card which would enable the consumers to go into our participating businesses, and they saved money. It was a win-win situation because the business owners got free advertising and new customers. The black consumer, when he patronized black business, he saved money. And at the same time was supporting black businesses. And I made my money by providing the services, of course, but I sold the directory and the card. And so everybody won. And that, ladies and gentlemen, and so that's where actually the Informer newspaper was born. Because I have met so many wonderful black business owners doing my research, seeking them out, that I said to myself, people need to know who and where these people are, because they told me their story. They told me their struggles. And for the first time in my life, when it came to black people and black businesses, I was so proud of my people. Because remind you, I told you, I came up in the 50s. We didn't see too much of us in media or in print. But I see, you know, three people in Jet magazines and things like that, but they was far off. I'm talking about locally. And so when I met these people, I was so proud because they had great product, great service. They supported the community, little league team, et cetera, et cetera. And so I said to myself, had no experience, but when you call, you go. And so I started researching how to start doing the newspapers because I wanted to highlight those people. And behold, 35, 40, 50 years later, here's the National Black Unity News, how things continue to evolve. But my solution was this. You know, it's unfortunate. We shouldn't have to. It should be a natural thing to do because they do it in the wild. They do it by everybody take care of its own. It's a natural thing. But because we have been taught in slavery to always stay in survival mode, every man for himself. And therefore, our mindset has been altered so greatly. We have been brainwashed, bamboozled, whatever you want to call it, to not trust one another, to not even like one another, not even to like yourself pretty much, because we didn't see so many great images of us, even to this day. Not only us, Native Americans, you know, everybody's history besides one group of people has been pretty much wiped out. I was watching a documentary the other day. Even the Asian Americans, when they were building the railroads, how they was written out of the history books when they came there, even when they took the photos out, so all the, when them two trains met, they had all of these Caucasian people. Not one Asian person was in that group photo. And so, you know, so we know the story about that. But getting back to our businesses, man, we can't be too concerned because they're going to do them, and it's time for us to do us. And again, the National Black Unity News is a solution for black people, black consumerism, black businesses, and that's what it's all about. And the directories which we are working on is going to get a lot of attention, a lot of attention in the very near future. As a matter of fact, I'm starting on it already. Mr. Murphy is as well. And we're going to reach what the intended director to be, a nationwide black business director, and you will see miraculous things happen with this directory in the next month or two. But because it's so needed, and after all of these years, 30, 40 years later, the directory, the newspapers, actually they had declined over the years. And we are seeing, to me personally, we are in worse condition than we was back 30, 40 years ago. Because we came off the attitude with the mindset. From my generation at that time, we had a powerful mindset because that's when I'm black and I'm proud. That's when, like my brother and my sister-in-law, they came from the military. They remember the dab. You can go all over the world. People be slapping hands and holding up their fist. Hey, bro, you know, and we greet each other with love. We had all types of powerful organizations doing that. You know, the Panthers, the SNCC, and Urban League, all of them. They was, I mean, everybody was rolling back in the day. But unfortunately, all those organizations was getting strong at that time, and they was connecting one to one another. But again, a lot of people didn't want to see that to happen, so they penetrated, they broke them down, and most of them have no power, if any, that they still around. But old things can become new. And then the Bible says, can these dry bones, you know, live again? And I believe they can. And I believe that, you know, we are the same people. We just, our mindsets have been greatly altered. But, you know, the original man is still in us. And the original DNA, and so it's been altered a lot. But again, I still think we are from the original people, and we are not the last, we the first. And I believe that if I know it can be done because it's already been done just with the people on this call. The people on this call, a lot of them are doing individual things that enhancing our quality of life and on the individual basis. But now we are coming together collectively in more than one way, not only through the newspaper, through the directory, but we're going to be doing a great series of podcasting all over the place. And so, you know, so get ready. So we get ready to move in some more territories, and we're not sitting down, we're standing up. and we going forth. We not playing defense anymore. We going offense. We going out. We ain't waiting people to come do for us. It's time for us to do for ourselves. And so I went on and on and on, and I'm open up. And if you don't ask, if you don't talk about it, I'm gonna call you out. But again, we have with us tonight Mr. Vernon Streeter, who's doing some wonderful things with Black Media. We have Mr. Walter Murphy, managing director of the National Black Unity News, who's doing some great wonderful things. We have Mr. Michael Thomas with us this evening, who's doing some great things with 1,000 Great Minds, and he has a lot of great ideas as well. We have Mr. Leroy McKenzie, who's editing the publication as well, and he does, I mean, this brother, man, he's extremely busy, and he's involved with so many black organizations. I mean, he's a prime example that you can get involved with a multitude of things. Well, how do you say, walking chew gum at the same time. And he's involved with black professional men. I mean, this brother is into a lot of things, and book fairs, all kinds of things all over the place. He interviews people, helps people. And he's an author. We have Mr. Daniel White, NFL player, ex-NFL player, who has great ideas about some of the futuristic things so he can prevent people in the sporting arena from, you know, getting hurt and not getting their just due after they put in their work. And we have Miss Kathleen Murphy with us tonight, who is our youth editor, who's always writing about our children and how we can support our youth and encourage them to read and to get educated. Not only does she write about it, but she is about it, because she's involved with so many different organizations that help our young people. So, I mean, she's in all types of clubs, organizations, and everything. And plus, she spent her a lifetime in military as well, who has served our country, and she continues to serve in so many other capacities. And we have Mrs. Satawi Jahi on here as well, who he and I go back a long way, but he has a strong history of working with our youth and educating our youth, nurturing our youth in so many ways. And he also involved with businesses, taxes and home-based services, which, you know, teach us how to keep some of that money in our own community. So with that being said, I think I got most of everybody that's on here thus far. But since I'm going to open up this discussion, we are in some trying times, as I mentioned earlier, about black businesses here in the United States. A lot of people have lost their businesses, not just black people, but a lot of people lost their business during the pandemic. But what I'm finding out, a lot of those people who lost businesses, lost their jobs, now their creative geniuses are coming to be. And now they are starting businesses in spite of everything else. And so, but they got an uphill battle. And those of us who are seasoned out here, who's been around the block once or twice, you know, it's always good to share information that can help our younger people or anybody, so they don't have to bump their heads the way we had to, you know. And so if you can share information, that's what I'm about. And so with that being said, I'm gonna start off. Mr. Leroy McKenzie, can you unmute yourself, sir? How you doing this evening?
I'm great. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Can hear you loud and clear. Let me ask you a question before I ask you another question. No, it's important because, you know, information is power, and reading, you know, the old saying, they say, you want to hide something from us, you put it in a book. And, because a lot of us, one more time, they wouldn't let us read. We got strung up with just reading. That's how powerful what you do is, you know. So if it was that important to them to hurt you and kill you because you wanted to read, so must be something about to how powerful that thing is then. But since you involved with that, you're author of so many other books, and you assist people with helping them with their books. First, I just always want to know, why did you choose that particular field?
Well, honestly, writing was something that I don't say fell into, but it started off with me when I was in college, and I was just writing poetry. and it was just me getting stuff out of my head. And I didn't, you know, at that time I wasn't even thinking about putting anything in a book. I've always been a reader, so, you know, reading, so I can see how I fell into it. But back then I was writing poetry, and it was just a means of me being able to get what was in my head out. And so some years later, I happened to show it to, you know, some friends and other folks, and they were like, "Well, you need to put this in a book." I was like, "Really?" I was like, I didn't think I had enough poetry to put into a book. But then too, I didn't know anything about writing. I didn't know the business aspect of writing. So, you know, when they put that bug in my ear, I started thinking about it. And me, I prayed about it. I was like, "All right, Lord, if this is the road that you want me to go, I don't feel like I have enough to be able to put into a book." So the funny thing was, when, as I started to write, the more I wrote my poetry, the more I felt I had to say. So I started just seeing different things that I wanted to write about, and that I was passionate about and stuff like that. So it came out in my poetry. So I put my first two books of poetry together, and never wanted to go the traditional route, because I knew poetry is like jazz. It's something that people, you either get it or you don't. You either, you know, you either into it or you're not. It's kind of eclectic. So I was just like, "All right, I'll put it in a book, and if it does what it does, it does." So did that, and before I even started writing, I started doing some research on, you know, writing, you know, being an author, writing a book and stuff like that and everything, and did my research in the industry and found out the information, you know, some things and what I needed to do and stuff like that, because I knew going the traditional route wasn't me, because I didn't want anybody telling me what my vision was, how to write it and all of those things. So I put those two books together and had them out there. And then at the same time, or by that time when I put those books out, I had been in corporate America for some years, and I had seen just how corporate America was being run down. And this was in the late 90s, getting ready to go into the 2000s, when everybody was talking about the Y2K and you know, that the systems were going to crash and everything like that. And the thing that I had noticed was leadership and people running their businesses, they were being run into the ground. And they were being run into the ground because of a couple of reasons. You had people who were in leadership that either just wanted the title, you know, of being a manager, being, you know, in this position, or they weren't ready for the position, in the position, kind of, you know, just trying to figure it out. They didn't even know. So that became the what I wanted to write about. How do we as leaders, how do we as businesses do what we need to do in order to be able to survive the Y2K, in order to be able to survive as businesses? So that triggered me into starting writing those books. And since I'd done the research for publishing a book and everything like that, I said, you know, all right, I'm going to go and do this, you know, I'm going to do it myself. And it worked out. I created three books out of that. And what really helped me along the way was Mr. Paul Coates, who owns Black Classic Press here in Baltimore. My second book that I had, the business book that I had, I went to him because I wanted them to do my printing, and talked to him about my project, told him what I wanted, gave it to him, and he walked me through the whole process, that whole printing, and it gave me the confidence I needed in order to be able to go ahead and publish my book. So I'm always forever grateful for Mr. Coates, his family, and everything that they did for me to walk me through, help me to understand what I needed to do, how I could do it, and all of those things. So that's how I got into writing. You know, that put me into writing and being able to write, you know, write the books and why I wanted to be able to put things in writing, as opposed to, you know, in addition to other things.
Okay, very quickly, sir. I'm going to ask you one more quick. I'm trying to get to the rest of our guests this evening. Today, and I know you said back in the beginning of, you know, 2000, mm-hmm. but today, Do you see any difference? Is it up, down, back, going forward? What do you see today?
Well, it actually, you think that's 21 years ago. So around 21, 22, let's do this around 25 years ago. And the industry has changed in and of itself because many of the bookstores are closed, are gone. The brick and mortar bookstores are gone. I think that there are only Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, and maybe the smaller mom-and-pop bookstores that are around. So that dynamic has changed tremendously because you don't have the book chains that you can go to as an author. So your books aren't sitting on their shelves. So everything has become, you got the ebooks that have been added now, that digital aspect of writing has changed the industry itself. So that's the biggest difference to me that I see now. The big chains are gone, and that playing field has been leveled now for authors because you don't need to be in the big bookstores. You don't need to me. You don't need to be on Amazon, who I think takes advantage of authors. But you know, because authors want to have, then they, oh, I'm a Amazon bestseller. I'm this, that, and the other. And you can get my book on Amazon. But to me, I'm like, why would I want to give Amazon 60% of my profit when I can have my own website, and I can tell people to go to my website, purchase my book, make that investment, and do it. So that's the biggest difference.
Now, look, I see a young lady. I hope it's that young lady, Miss Kim Poole, one of our editors. I don't know what kind of time she's on. Kim, is that you? Teaching Artists Institute? Or can you talk? Sometimes I know Kim be working sometimes. You know? But if you can talk, unmute yourself, Kim. I want to ask you back because she had just came back from Africa. And actually, she's featured on the front page of this issue of the National Black Unity News. And but I, you know, evidently she may not be able to speak. But if you can, Kim, just chime on and let me know. But in any case, getting back to our subject. Brother Satai, are you still with me, sir?
Yes, sir.
You know, and I know, you know, you open up with, you know, dealing with business, and I know you do taxes and a lot of other stuff. And you know, and like I say, dealing with economics, a lot of people are not familiar or aware of some of the benefits by just being an entrepreneur. Can you share a little bit with some of the benefits of just being an entrepreneur?
Yes, sir. Okay, one is from a tax perspective, if you decide to open a home-based business and leverage it against your W-2 job, it opens up tremendous tax breaks for you. Allows you to write off such things as your cell phone. Most people right now, they're overpaying their taxes by $3,000 to $9,000 a year. So that's too much money to give our favorite uncle that we don't like, Uncle Sam. You know, and so, you know, the thing is, having a home-based business opens up, especially like the business that I'm, one of the businesses that I have is a travel business that opens up 142 different tax deductions. I don't have time to go over all of those on here. But some of the main ones is your cell phone. Right now you don't get any tax deduction for your cell phone. And why is it important to have these tax deductions? Because most people that have a business that do not leverage it against their job is they pay taxes on the income that they have come in. Where if you own a business, you pay taxes on the money that you have after business expenses. So it allows you to be able to take and list several different we call itemized deductions, in terms of itemized business deductions, and allows you to take and reduce your taxable income. And you want to do is you want to be able to reduce your taxable income. Now, another example is, and it's one that people always say, well, how did he do that? Donald Trump and Robert Kiyosaki, they are masters at lowering their taxable income. even though Trump had billions of dollars on paper, his tax returns always show the loss. Always show the loss. So the thing is, you know, get with someone who can be able to share the tax game with you so that you know how to not pay your your unfair share of taxes, because most people, they pay too much on their taxes because of ignorance. So you do not want to be tax ignorant, because then you can become what's called tax poor. So that's, you know, that's a key element for people to learn.
Okay, let me say this to you, Brother Satyra.
Yes, sir.
Because I don't know what's going on in most major cities, but I know here in Baltimore, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people are losing the house. You know, well, you can consider the tax, even things like water bills and you know, properties and everything else. That, you know, they don't pay the taxes, this, that, because they, for some reason or another, because they're not vested in information about how they can use that them places, like you say, the houses as a workplace, or they could deduct this, you know, and they wouldn't have to pay that many taxes. So a lot of us has gone through some tremendous thing because lack of information. And so that's why it's important, what Brother Satyra just mentioned to you, that you need to get with somebody who can assist you with information. Because like I said, even that $3,000 to $9,000 a year could have paid off those water bills. It could have paid off, you know, everything else that, you know, the city taking, you know, people's properties and putting people out in the street after all them years that their parents had worked for and they had worked for, unfortunately, and then they losing homes and everything else. So, again, I appreciate you, sir, but, you know, you want to finish up?
Only other thing I was going to mention is that, you know, we have an article in the upcoming edition of the paper, how a person can get a business for $79. And it's a business in the travel industry. And what it'll do is enable you to do some real big things. One, travel at a discount where you're able to save on your travel. And travel's starting to open back up. So, you know, I encourage people to take a look at that article. You can read the article. I'm not going to go into it right now because I see we're at 8:07, and I want to make sure some other people will be able to get in on this dialogue and conversation.
Oh, okay, yeah, because I'm going to have to move right along because quite a few people that I want to get to. Brother Thomas, how you doing, sir? Can you unmute yourself?
Good, David. Good. Thank you for asking. How about you? How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Now, this gentleman has, you know, like I was telling you about the National Black Unity News, we have Collective Works. And this brother has a program called 1,000 Great Minds. And see, he understands the power of we, us. You know, when we can unite our forces and services together, we can do some mighty things. And I just want to ask you a question, sir.
Yes, sir.
About people, us, we. From your perspective, now I know it's difficult. You can do your own thing out here. But how do you see the power of us from your perspective?
At this point, honestly, I'm a follower of Dr. Claude Anderson, who is has the book called Powernomics, the National Plan to Empower Black People, Black America. And he was the head of the Economic Development Division of the United States during Jimmy Carter's era, and therefore he was able to oversee the economics and the economic disparities among all races as relates to credit, businesses, business financials, business grants, business money coming to businesses. And he concluded that black people are the only underclass in America trapped in a real live monopoly game that since the Emancipation Proclamation over 150 years ago, we've only owned one half of 1% of the wealth in this country. So if you can imagine a 99-pound boy standing on a 99.5-pound boy standing on a half a pound balloon, the balloon would be crushed. And the picture is even more colorful than that, to the extent that I made a chart whereby I had 100 blocks, and one of those blocks was a half of a block representing a red block, and the other 99 blocks were yellow, representing a European race. And Dr. Claude Anderson also concluded that, and this is huge, that Europeans own 99% of the wealth on earth. This is a huge thing to comprehend. We don't know what we are up against. We don't comprehend that. And that there are eight European men who own half the world's wealth. Eight European men who own half the world's wealth. So my view and perspective of where we are, you know, and what we need to do in order to get out of this economic entrapment, whereby we're at the bottom of the economic totem pole, below the Arabs, below the Hispanics, below the Asians, below the Europeans. We need to implement the content of the book called Think and Grow Rich. Even though we are already rich, the $1.4 trillion that we get annually, we are already rich. However, we don't have a plan in place. We're not organized. The Methodist Christians are organized. The Presbyterian Christians are organized. The Catholic Christians are organized. The Muslims are organized. And the United States, U.S. House of Prayer organized. But these are decentralized organizations, meaning that they have no central organization. So in order to make sense out of things, to work against what we are up against, and these various categories of black people, we have black people who are in business full-time. We have black people who are in business half-time who have full-time jobs. We have black people who work two or three part-time jobs and have part-time businesses. So these various categories, and also if you're taking care of your home, you're attending the church, you're taking care of your business, and you're working on your job, what that says is that you're working part-time against a full-time adversary. Because you're tied up, and you're working part-time against a full-time adversary, which is our debt, our mortgage payments, our car payments, our education loans are huge, these credit cards and things. And we stay under this economic slavery. We stay under it. And we do not have a plan or an organization or a definite chief aim to make the change. So that's why 1,000 Great Minds comes about, to be that central processing unit, that chief administrative mechanism, that head that has this definite chief aim to turn black economics around, to the extent that we claim to be the central processing unit. And I mentioned how we have the 435 representatives in the House and the 100 representatives in the Senate and the 9 Supreme Court justices and the president and vice president, 546 people running the country. I think that by having someone to give their undivided, an entity to give its undivided, sustained, focused, undistracted, undisturbed, full-time attention to turning this thing around is what is necessary to turn it around, because we're working part-time against a full-time adversary of this debt. And we need someone to come up with the plan and the organization required to execute the plan in order to defeat this bondage, this slavery that we're in, through signing papers that the extent of it is foreclosure, rental eviction, car repossession, bankruptcy, these things that keep us in the same place and that have no, and it's not designed to let us loose.
That's right. I agree. Okay. Thank you, sir. That's powerful.
Yes, sir.
Brother Milan, are you available? Can you unmute yourself? In any case, this young man, Milan Butler, who's also an editor in the National Black Unity News, I attended a meeting this past Saturday, where he had instituted a group of us, which is one of the National Black Unity News directories involved with. And I wanted him to share some information. Milan, if you can unmute yourself, I'd like you to explain what's going on with your organization. Now, it's a powerful way that collectively we can be in doing individual things, but collectively pull our resources together. And I'll be sharing a lot of information with the National Black Unity Reward Card. And I have quite a few of them on hand right now as we speak. And not only will it get benefits to people involved with the newspaper as well as the directory, but it also aligns us up with other groups and organizations who have their own cards, their own networks, but they are interchangeable with these cards. Their cards, our cards, they can use their cards and come into our directory and get the benefits as well. And so this is another way some of our young minds, old minds, and our minds, collective minds, come together and making things happen, making changes. And as I just mentioned to you, Kim Poole, who's also an editor in our publication, just returned from Atlanta for another one of our editors, Brother High Key. And like I said, they're featured on the front page of this issue, and they both have very interesting stories about their trips. And to see the same thing is happening to us here is happening to us all over the world, even in our own African countries. And so, you know, we're growing far and wide. But like I say, this is a journey. That, you know, someone always said, Brother Cliff said, this is not a marathon. This is a relay race. You know, each one of us got to hand the baton off and keep it moving. And we're doing that. And so with that being said, I want to also bring up Mr. Walter Murphy. Mr. Murphy, are you available, sir?
I sure am, David. How are you doing, Mr. Murphy?
I'm sleepy, but I'm still here. And I've been up all night. I can tell you why. First, before I bring Mr. Murphy on, I'm going to tell you why. But guess what I was doing? I was stuffing envelopes, filling up boxes, to send all over the country, and I enjoyed every minute of it. Because I remember several years ago, it only took me about 15 minutes to do that job. So now it's going all over the world, and the paper go and the little envelopes. I mean, man, they are all over. They're a place I ain't even never heard of. You know,
that's
so,
good news. Yeah, well, yeah. That sounds like to me.
That's right. And so, Mr. Murphy is our managing director, and he does a lot of great things. Him and his wife Kathleen Murphy. I'm gonna bring her up next. Because they're involved with, I just want to bring this aspect up. See, I'm trying to make everybody show how well-rounded we are and how we evolve. Now, we know that, you know, your specific thing that you do with the newspaper, but I want to, you know, take you outside of this arena and go into some of your personal arenas. And I'm going to bring Kathleen up next about some of the other social networks that you actually involved with that helps people.
Well, you're talking about there is a lot of other different organizations that I've dabbled with over the years, but you know, right now I'm really kind of want to stay on subject with the idea of black businesses. And of course, when you think about black businesses, you know, there are different types of black businesses. There are black-owned businesses, and there are black-owned businesses that are affiliated with a lot of other companies that are not necessarily black. Case in point, there are a lot of multi-level marketing businesses that happen to be, some of them are owned by black people. Don't get this wrong. You know, there are black MLM ownership, but at the same time, there are black business owners, and you are an independent owner. And I want to piggyback on what Brother Satawi Jahi was talking about, the idea of how powerful a business is in your household. What it does for you as an individual, I'm talking about getting your grass cut, all kinds of things goes along with the idea of you having a home-based business. If you don't have one, it does not cost you a lot to go find one. There is something out there in the society somewhere that you can find that you'd like to do, that you can put a nickel in your pocket and become a legitimate, bona fide, certified business. With the identification number, federal identification number, everything that goes along with it. Now, one of the things I also wanted to piggyback on, David, is I like the idea of, you know, dabbling outside of the National Black Unity News. There's a lot of things, and to include the idea of education. I am all over the idea of what is known as CTE and what we used to call VOTEC training, on vocational medical training. It is a passion of mine to try to get it so that more of our youth can have more access to learning how to use their hands and their heads at the same time. I believe it's vital that, you know, a lot of people don't get it, but some of those skills will never, ever go away. I don't care how many robots we get. I don't care. We need folks that can do certain things, whether it's plumbing or all of those things are still very viable in our community and needed. And it can put a nice paycheck in a household. In fact, I was talking to the superintendent of schools here in the city of Petersburg. That's when he was a superintendent. He had been the superintendent of a couple of counties in this town, in our state, and he is famous as being a superintendent. He is really, really good. And he was telling me about the idea of his children now all attending college. And what he was saying was that this career technical education, CTE, or what we call vocational technical education, he said to me that he was gearing his kids towards those types of skills because they're the ones that's going to sustain his kids. He says most kids come in at the age of 22 after they've gotten a little college degree and don't have a job and don't know what to do. So that's one thing. I had this thing about the idea of business itself and what's going on in our society today. And I looked up in this thing called the Guidance Financial. And it's just kind of telling us about what's happened in the Black community as far as their survey is concerned in reference to some of the trends that's already happened. And one of the things they were saying is that most of the small businesses or Black-owned businesses in America, they survive and they are, and I want to read this verbatim, want to grow their businesses as opposed to sustaining it, selling it, or opening a new location. 61% of the correspondents said that they have plans to expand or remodel their businesses in the years 2021. And so what I'm getting is that even though COVID-19 slowed a lot of things down, even though it has put a lot of people out of business, it has, no question about it. But what it has for those survivors, those ones who are still around, they're looking at not only maintaining, but not only sustaining, but going farther than what they used to be. And that's the same thing with the National Black Energy News. And this is one of the reasons why in the very near future, you're going to see how the expansion of the directories of the National Black Energy News is going to just go crazy because it is one of the most viable things I think we need. And if you are on this call and you have not done so, sign up now. There's value to signing up now. I will tell you again, if you have not already signed up in a directory, please do so now. All right, back to you, Dave.
All right. Ms. Kathleen Murphy, are you available?
Perfect.
Okay.
I am available.
Okay, first of all, I just want to share a little bit of information about Kathleen Murphy. She's the editor of the National Black Unity News. I mentioned that earlier. But she deals with one of our most prized possessions, our children. And she does a lot of things with children. So can you tell me, I just want to ask you a question about that.
All right.
Dealing with our children because they are our future, but what do you see some of the most important factors that our children need to have to proceed in this type of world that we live in, from your perspective?
I think that, and thank you for asking me that question. I think that our children, they are valuable. When I volunteer a lot, I go into the schools, even during the virtual, the restrictions, I was able to still monthly go into the schools and read in a virtual setting. The students don't really want much. They just want you to really pay attention to them, to be a part of what they're doing, and for you to just be a good listener. And that's the easy part. I think the difficult part is the parents. That's where, you know, I'll always say it's three important points to making a child successful in educating a child. That's the child's part, the school/teacher's part, and the parents' part. And the parents, some of them today are not necessarily doing their part. And that's what I'm looking at now. What can we do to strengthen the parents' part, to bring those parents, these single parents, up to where they need to be to help their children? So I work in different programs. I do a lot of books purchasing. And I had a question for Mr. McKenzie, if I might, not to jump around, but he did say that a lot of people go to Amazon to purchase their books. Well, you know, I'm one of those people. I buy a lot of books for a lot of different organizations. I spend a lot of money. I go into different sites, and it's easy for me to click Amazon for many reasons. Amazon, the website is easy to see. It's easy to look at the books. You can turn the pages and look at that. But most importantly, every time I pick a book that's not Amazon, that's from an owner or a small bookstore, say it's in Seattle, Washington, when it's time to check out, it's separated. And I have to pay sometimes, lots of times, almost as much for the shipping as I do for the cost of the book. But when I click Amazon, I don't have that. Depending on if you buy $25 worth of books, a lot of times your shipping is free. And that's not with Prime. I don't deal with the Prime. I'm just going normal shipping. So, Mr. McKenzie, if you're there, I know what you're saying, but how I'm on a budget, using other people's money, spending money for those books. How do I get around that?
Well, Ms. Kathy, you're coming from the consumer perspective. Mm-hmm. What I'm talking about is being an author on Amazon, where the books that you're purchasing on Amazon, those authors, what happens is Amazon charges, they take a 60-40 split. Amazon gets 60%. The author gets 40% of those sales that you purchase of those books. So they include in Amazon 60%, they're including that shipping. All of that is a part of that 60% that they get from the author. That's what I'm talking about from that perspective.
Authors,
but if you when I get it, when you purchase it directly from, you know, from a smaller bookstore and even from the author directly off of their website, yeah, they're going to include shipping in theirs as well. My thing is, for the author, they aren't, even with the shipping, they aren't getting cut out of that. They're getting 100% versus 40%.
Right. I see.
Out of that money that's being spent. And even when you think of business as an overall, when it comes to us as minority owned businesses, our prices are going to be a little higher because we're not buying at a volume in bulk that others are. So our prices have to be a little higher to compensate for that difference. So that when you see our prices a little bit higher and all those things, I think of terms of purchasing our, you know, whether it's books or supplies, anything that we, our businesses, because we don't buy in bulk. And maybe that's one of the things we can talk about tonight, where businesses need to think of collaborating. And they go and can buy in bulk. That way they get a discounted price on the overall purchase of, you know, of their products and stuff. And that can save them money as well.
That's a good point to look at. There are organizations out there that I know that they've merged together in corporation, and they have it where you go straight to them and it's like a warehouse. They're not publishing that book. They are actually a distribution /warehouse facility.
Exactly. And that's all Amazon is. It's a warehouse. It's a warehouse facility that houses books that they buy, whatever other products that they buy, where even like a Walmart. Even Walmart, when they buy products, they go to distributors. They go to a warehouse and say, hey, we want 50,000 of this particular product. And then they disperse it into their particular stores all around the country. That's how they're able to sell the products at a discounted price.
And on top of that, Kathleen, this is why the directory and this reward card going to be so powerful. Because when you purchase this card, and when you do see a black officer that's listening to our directory, that discount and everything going to compensate for the shipping and handling now. So that way, you know, we continue to be able to support one another with everybody. So it don't seem like because you want to support a black business or a black author that, you know, you can't be paying these exuberant prices. So everybody got to take a little cut sometime to keep that money flowing, you know, amongst ourselves. Yeah. And that's what
can I make a suggestion real quick? Can I make a suggestion real quick? This is kind of ironic because, you know, sometimes, you know, we talk about a system of purchasing books. It's amazing. But, you know, I was just thinking about the price of the book and the shipping costs. If the author himself or herself added that price into the cost of the book or what the book is going to cost in the first thing if you buy it off the shelf, then when they ship it, it would be to their advantage because if that's what Walmart, Amazon is doing to them. They're taking 60% of the product and then shipping it for them.
Yeah, and some do. Some authors do include the shipping cost. Some do. And it's just a matter of when you calculate the price of the book, let's say it costs you to print let's say 100 books will cost you $3 to print.
Right.
So your price would be, the rule of thumb is usually three times. So that book that costs you $3 to print, you would print it at $9 to $12 usually, right. And then actually maybe even $14.99, $15. That way your profit margin is there, and then that's compensating you as well for the shipping. Or you charge, you know, $19.99, and that would for sure cover that shipping cost as well. And you just say shipping and handling included.
Yes.
And, you know.
Yes. And thank you for all of that. And I will look at that when I order my books personally. I will be able to really think about what you've shared with me, and I will. I have to order a book right now. I have a niece that said to Aunt Kat, do you know the book Becoming? Michelle, I says, of course I do. I bought three of them when they came. And I gave them, I kept one and gave two as Christmas presents the year before last. And she said, I need one for upcoming class for September. I said, no problem. I'll order it. Now, I haven't ordered it. That was on Sunday. And so I haven't ordered it yet, but I know it's going to be 30-something. And so I'm going to look and see. I don't know. I don't know who's distributing that book right now. I have it in my office there. I need to look at that. But what I want to tell you is this, if I have a moment. I received three boxes of brand new books last Thursday, I believe it was, from a distributor. There was an order that was placed. So I had time. I started looking up the authors. These are all diverse books, culturally diverse books of black and brown people. I thought, let me see who the authors are. So I started each one. I was doing an inventory. As I inventoried the books to make sure everything was in the box as stated, I looked 99.9% of the authors are white authors writing the stories of our black people.
Well, Kathleen, if you look at our history book, they still write 99%.
And guess what? One guy, he's got his picture up there, black gentleman, but right above him is the white lady that's probably had the money. And she's up there just smiling over him in the book, in the back cover. You know how to show the pictures on the back page. So I'm talking about the books that you wouldn't think that they would even be don't think that they don't know where the money is. They're not concerned too much about the educational aspect of what's coming out. It's all about the money, because I told you all there was a void. 3 years ago, I couldn't find those books. And now all of a sudden, since Black Lives Matter, I can find those books, and they're all written by white authors.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, yeah, we're going to have to move right along because, like I said, we passed, you know, our normal time.
I'm sorry.
No, it's good because, like I said, one thing about us, we control our time. We are not restricted to what they say. We control this thing. And so I don't have no problem, because like I said, if it's about helping people and bringing clarity to our issue, then it's worth the time. And so you don't think you didn't preach nothing, because it was worth that, because people need to hear this. And, you know, and we need to start researching. When we start spending our money and we think we're buying our products, you better do a little bit more, research and see where that money actually is going, or to whom it's going to. But
yes.
before we close out, there's a couple more people I haven't got to. Mr. Daniel Whaler, are you available, sir?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, how you doing this evening?
Greetings to you, yes. David. Greetings to everybody, ladies and gentlemen.
Just before you get started, I just want to let you know, for those of you, Sir Tywee, who's out of town, Mr. Murphy, Daniel, and Mr. Thomas, your papers are in the post office on its way. So, you know, hopefully sometime I took it to the main post office this time, so that it wouldn't get caught up in these little teeny post office, because I believe that's what happened to your papers the last time, Mr. Murphy. They showed it on the news in our local post office, in our local community. They had boxed, packed up to the ceiling.
Something's going on, but it's all good.
Well, you know, it's a triple down effect from what Trump and them did. We are, you know, everything else added on to it. But in any case, Mr. Daniel White, you said you're going to jump right into it. I don't know what you're going to jump into, but go ahead and brother.
Yeah.
Jump deep. Go ahead. Yes,
yeah,
sir.
Yeah, okay. Well, this is going to be where I'm going to start at the deepest. Is the book I read a lot is the Bible, and it says, without counsel, purposes are disappointed, and the multitude of counselors, they are established. That's Proverbs 50:15-22. And I believe it and live by it and have grown close to it. One of the things I want to address right quick, you know, I don't need an answer for it, but I want to know, who is they that calculate group spending totals? And who's seeing the money? Because I'd like to get up there to see where the money is and calculate all these groups are spending in our society. I want to see where the money is. That's number one. Number two is the gentleman that's on here with taxes. I wanted to ask the question of how valuable are the 501c3 nonprofit organizations? Because I know some have been attempted to shut down nonprofits, because we as black people in America have thrived off the nonprofits, and of course, it's always been attacked financially. So I want to get caught up on that. And then what I do actually is I advocate for youth student athletes. That's number one. And number two, along with serving on racial justice reform with the United Methodist Church committee gathering, I serve in the community of other sports organizations, meeting with student athletes at the grassroots levels, and go with them through some of their struggles that they go through as student athletes. In my book that I published, I talk about the things I struggled through obtaining, becoming an athlete. There's a lot of stories as individuals moving into the high school, higher ranks of sports. I have a nephew that just finished 14th to compete for Tokyo in the Olympics, but he's coming back. He's 21 years old, so he's going to be coming back in the triple jump to perform. So I work with him. There's a struggle that the young lady that got disqualified at 100, there's a struggle that I'm sure she has a story to talk about. What she did, why she did the things, and what she had to struggle through to get to. So it's our young people that need some help also, because that's going to be the legacy. And if we can get them to up to the top where the money is, and that's what I was talking to my nephew about, how do you get involved with being paid as a track in the track field now? So he's making me aware of that. But that's where we need to get those individuals as student athletes in the paper. This platform, David, that you've given me an opportunity to be a part of with Vehicles for Change, those individuals that are learning to become auto mechanics that have been incarcerated and now serving in the community to give away new cars that are donated to them to single-parent households that don't have transportation. And a lot of them were student athletes that got incarcerated, got kicked to the curb by whatever means that the system has betrayed them to disassociate them with organizations within the community. So as an advocate serving in the capacity of trying to meet with those student athletes, I've crossed many student athletes who sought suicide, came from single-parent households because they didn't have shoes to wear in the sports events or didn't have the equipment to participate. So these student athletes that I know, we have dominated the country, and of course we're going to dominate the sport in the Olympics to get a lot of points so that the United States is looked upon. But there's a lot of things that these student athletes have to struggle through to get to that point. And nobody, you know, not too many people are looking at what they need to get there. My nephew needs a sponsor. He needs sponsorship to strive through getting to the Olympics. He's leaving for Las Vegas, Los Angeles in January to begin his training for the Paris Olympics. So I just say that to say that's what I advocate for as a student athlete. I still go through struggles. So Grace Through the Struggles is the title of my book, and Grace Through the Struggles will continue.
Brother Daniel, can I ask, or Brother David, can I ask a question real quick to Brother
Daniel?
Sure,
you can.
Real quick, with the situation with Sha'Carri Richardson, is there a coping like program that they have for student athletes who may be going through a situation like she went through with losing a mom, and that will give them an outlet so that they don't have to turn to smoking marijuana and mm-hmm. lose an opportunity like she lost this year? She's only 21 and she'll bounce back. But do you know mm-hmm. if there are systems in place for athletes such as that you're talking about?
No, I am not aware of programs that are in place for student athletes of that magnitude that was caught up in that situation. However, our group that we do, the National Student Athletic Society, we train them at the grassroots levels. We train college athletes how to become mentors. And in training them how to become mentors is very intense training. Of being the mentor. It's not just walking out there. You live through it, you've gone through it, so therefore you can train with the sensitivity of what these student athletes need. As I said, some of these student athletes have action of wanting to commit suicide. Some of them want to give up. Some of them want to turn around. Some of them don't have equipment. Some of these Olympians have to raise their own money to train. So consequently, you know, when there are struggles that go on in their life, they don't have too many resources to turn to get help, to get guidance of some sort. And that's why I believe in what the word said in a multitude of counselors, they're established.
Well, before, like I said, I'm getting old. That's why I have to jump in on this, because that was a very good question that you had, Mr. McKenzie, and a very good, great, great response. Because not only her, do you remember the young lady, you know, the gymnast? After all the great feats she did in the gym, they start teasing her about her hair.
Oh, yeah. Was it Gabby?
Yeah. You know, it's these stuff like this. Now, we don't know what goes on. They're young, and they work so hard, and then they be put down in society.
That's right.
You know, can you imagine what she go through internally? You know, the mental part of that. And not only her, but just about every black athlete out there. Get on the field and play. One of my good friends said when he used to go out there and play baseball, he was so good at it. But every time he went to one of the arenas, he was the N-word from the stands and stuff, you know. And he had to have such thick skin, but it messed with him. But, you know, because you mentioned that and Daniel is working towards that, you know, sometimes, you know, a thing just pops up and it's not popping because it's needed. That's why I was asked in the first place. And sometimes, because we now know that it's a great need for us, that's what we do. We solution-oriented, so we have to find some kind of way to fill that void, to put it in motion, so that not only okay, what level of athleticism you in, from the Olympic all the way down from Pee Wee Leagues.
Yes.
You know that we have to address that, because, you know, not only do you have to be mentally, physically, and everything else, you know, challenge and to do certain things, but mentally, but naturally, like you say, a lot of them don't, they don't have the resources to, they even compete with people on the other programs. And they probably be 10 times even greater than they are, you know, if they had the same resources other people had.
Go ahead. No, and even Brother Daniel, too, even the young tennis player.
Just recently, yeah.
Hers is on the mental aspect of it, uh-huh. Dealing with, you know, what you're talking about, Brother David. And there does, Brother Daniel, I mean, and maybe that's something for you all to look at, because that's a serious issue that's coming up now with a lot of the younger athletes. They don't have the mental wherewithal to deal with that level of notoriety and everything else that comes with it in order to be able to cope with it. Because you gotta be strong. You gotta be strong.
And again, I want to address that too. On a personal note with myself, at the stage I am, you know, and I don't mind it, to putting it out there. But through a lot of training, a lot of things that I've gone through, not to be recognized and had a lot of examination and so forth and so on, you know, just sniff this and going back out in the field and play, you know, that type of stuff. I mean, those of you who don't know what that is, it's just, it's a capsule that you have to, they squeeze, pop it up your nose. If you have your senses back, you go back out on the field and get hit again, kind of like a dodo bird, you know. You just keep going back out there. But anyway, to be recognized with PTSD, it's not just in the military. It's with the athletes, too. It's through the crisis that they've come through as young individuals that they still come through and they still try to maintain, still try, that are expected to go out on the fields and courts to perform at a high level with the strain of what is going on mentally. And no one has really talked to about to counsel them through it. That's why this Bible verse is so important. We have to have a multitude of counselors for our student athletes at the grassroots level, the elementary level, the middle school level, the high school level, college level, and the professional levels.
I agree. I think I may have mentioned this to you earlier, that we're going to be doing a series of podcasts, and a lot of people on here right now could be hosting their own podcast in the very near future. And a lot of those issues are going to be addressed. But, you know, we got to do just a little bit more than just talk about it.
That's right.
You know, we're going to have to put in plans of action that, you know, these are our children, these are our people, and we wise enough to know, because, like I say, most of us have been through it on different levels. It ain't got to be on the sporting fields, the business arena, everything. All of us have been hit by one area or another, the way we was raised up. Things like people like me, how I was traumatized when I didn't get served at the counter. Wasn't nobody, this person wouldn't serve me. All I wanted was a bag of chips and a soup, and I was willing to pay for it. You know, stuff like that, you know, that traumatizes you. You know, you try to fix something wrong with me, and you take that kind of stuff internally. And so we deal with so many issues because we in a society, unfortunately, looks at its fellow citizens in such a negative way. And they train our people up, you know, with their kind of attitude. And it's up to us. Like I say, nobody coming back to save us. It's up to us to start saving us. Now, of course, we got God, but God worked through his people. And we can't wait on God, because God works through us. So it ain't no more excuses that why we shouldn't be dealing with a lot of these issues. And that's why it's so important, ladies and gentlemen. Again, I'm going full circle. Coming back to the National Black Unity, that's why we need editors in this publication to deal with certain subject matters. Because just like you say, from the Pee Wee Leagues all the way up to the Olympic Leagues, our people are going through it. And they need to hear from people who have been through it and what to do about it, how to deal with it. And if we don't do it, I hate to say it, I don't think nobody else will. Because a lot of people want us to continue in this situation. And that's why I'm going to say to y'all in closing, too, is this. You know, I know a lot of us, you know, over the years, we've done a lot of things. We helped a lot of people along the way. But see, I believe that God didn't bring us this to just stop. I believe with all the wisdom, the knowledge, the love, and the concern that you've seen over the years and the experiences that you have, is that when you get to a tender age as we, and we got some young folks on here right now who's going through it too, it's time for us to step up and step out. And I remember this lady named Lola Jenkins told me one time, and she said this, because I told her I was going to stop doing the newspaper one day. That's when the internet was coming strong. I'm going to put this newspaper away and start working on some stuff on the internet. And she looked me very sternly in my eyes. And she said, I'm going to tell you something. She said, human beings, the only one thinks about retired and sitting back, retired from what? She said, a lion, always going to be a lion. She said, an eagle is always going to be an eagle until the day they die. Ain't no retirement from being an eagle. Ain't no retirement from being a lion. So who are we to sit back and say we retired from what? And you know, I don't think God put us on this earth just to hold a job down. I don't think God put us on this earth just to, you know, be self-satisfied. I believe God put us all on earth for a purpose and for a reason, and you say it that way. And if God put those gifts and talents, it is for you to share. Because as we just mentioned, I don't care what level you on, people are being traumatized by just daily life, but not daily living. And if those of us who was able to make it through it all after all of this stuff, and we made it through to this point in life, there is nowhere in the world that you should be sitting down talking about I'm giving up or giving in. This is the time of, if anything, it don't cost you nothing but your time and your love to share this wealth of information that you've been blessed with somebody else. And that's why I appreciate you all so much, because y'all doing that with one tool that we have, and that's the National Black Unity News. And I wish you would continue on, because we're going to be escalating. We're not waiting for people to come to, we going forward with podcasting, the directory, the newspaper, and everything else that y'all got in your arsenal, because it's all needed. And we're going to be doing, I'm going to be doing, I don't know about the rest, I'm going full steam ahead. You know, because every time I get on one of these podcasts with you all and we start to sharing, I learn something every time. And not only that, I also know where we need, there's a new battle that we haven't been talking about too much. And tonight was our athletes and the personal trauma that they go through. And about the books. You know how Amazon able to bamboozle us by using us and then make it all and turn around. They rob, then they call it self-giving to you. And so so many different things, systems that's in place that will continue to use us. But until we learn, like my brother Michael Thomas always was saying, until we learn how to take the reins in our own hands and run our own ships, and run our own society, and pull our resources together so that we can buy our own, you know, use our own resources, then, you know, it's going to be difficult for us. But like I said, every journey begins with the first step. And I believe the National Black Unity News is a great step. It's a great foundation. And then we're going to continue to build on it. And I invite each and every one of you to continue with, because I think about just about everybody on here is already involved with the National Black Unity News. Matter of fact, everybody is on here is involved with the National Black Unity News. And I want to thank a personal thanks to Mr. Thomas and Mr. Daniel White, because there are two new editors that just joined us. So I want y'all to give them a round of applause in your own little way.
All right.
Thank you, David.
Yeah, because
Mr. White.
Thank you.
Yeah.
This is Satawi Jahi. Mr. White.
Yes.
You had a question for me?
For the 501c3?
Yeah.
Yeah, 501c3. How valuable are they in the country now?
They're tremendously valuable because it enables you to do several different things. And one is you can do like the people like in the Jewish community, what they do is a lot of time we see where these cars are donated to a Jewish organization, and they're able to take and I'm just using this as an example, and I'm going to give you my number and you can call me and we can have a more in-depth conversation. They can take that car that you donate, run a car auto repair shop give you the book value for the car and then repair the car and then sell it. So, you know, that's the way a lot of time we look at these organizations and say, well, you know, what's the value in them taking my beat up jalopy? Because they can give you the book value for the beat up jalopy, which you can write off on your taxes as a charitable donation you made to an organization.
Mm-hmm.
And then they take and repair that vehicle, and then they sell it and put it back on the market. That's one
All right, Dave, do you mind him throwing me your number right quick? David.
Yes, sir. Here you go. 252-458-3712.
Thank you.
And what's yours, sir?
610-470-8467.
All right. With that being said, then, ladies and gentlemen, it is getting kind of late. And, again, we appreciate you. And I want to remind you all that we do have a call tomorrow night at 7:30. We'll be talking about some of the news with the National Black Unity News and some other issues, and hosted by Ms. Kathleen Murphy and Mr. Walter Murphy. So I encourage you to be on there because there's always some valuable information. And right now, because we are escalating, this is the time to get involved, to be engaged and everything else. You don't sit on the sideline because, like I say, this train is gone. It ain't going to stop for no one. And so, like I say, welcome aboard our new members as well as our seasoned members. And there will be more because, like I said before, I'm getting a little more laser focused. And there's a host of people who didn't even get in this issue that could have been in there. And so many people want to get involved, and I really perceive by the end of this year, we're going to reach out that target level, about 74 editors in this publication. And we're going to have to cut it down, shut it down at that point. I mean, not, you know, from the, you know, stop adding so many papers, because you don't want no a newspaper that you can't hardly hold in your hand sometimes. But in any case, there's other outlets, like I said, when you grow, you wait till you get to that step, and then, you know, there's other ways to deal with the thing. But in any case, y'all keep doing what you're doing. Keep serving the way you serve it. And I believe that on the individual basis, because you made it this far, but when we work collectively, that's true power. And in the national, like I said before, in the National Black Unity News, I really see unity. And I do see solutions, and I do know when we pull our resources together, when we pull our minds together, all things are possible. I truly believe that. And with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to say bid you good night and see you tomorrow evening. Take care.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. Good night.
Good night.
Good night, y'all. Peace and blessings. One love.
Peace and blessings.
Goodbye.
Telling me.
church.